I'm Robert Rogers from Parkinson's Recovery. I suspect that most of you who are tuning in to this teleseminar are thinking that I'm going to be giving you specific information about the first step you need to take in order to be able to start your recovery from the symptoms of Parkinson's. And that's right. That's exactly what I'm going to talk about today, the first step. And part of me suspects that some of you are probably thinking I'm going to be saying something to the effect of, oh, the first step is what you put in your body, so watch the nutrition. Or perhaps some of you are thinking, oh, he's going to say exercise. Exercise is the first step. Or fill in the blank. Well, guess what? That's not what I'm going to talk about. I'm not going to talk about any of those specific types of steps that I do a lot of writing about and that you see discussions about in the blogs and the newsletters. Rather, I really am today going to talk about the most important and the essential step that is required if, in fact, you want to launch a program to recover. And by that I mean see a significant relief from the symptoms of Parkinson's or to become literally symptom-free. So what is the secret? I got a rather interesting correspondence a few days ago from an individual that said the following types of things. They said, you know, I find the kinds of things that you write about really intriguing. They're interesting. But I'm wondering, what's the hidden agenda? I keep waiting for the product that you're going to offer that's going to solve everybody's problem. So what is it? What's the secret? What's hidden here? And first of all, I was a bit surprised by that correspondence and didn't really expect it. And I found myself writing back with the report, what you see is what you get. And no, there really isn't any kind of hidden product or a hidden agenda. And no, I'm not going to be coming out after you've been with me for several weeks or months or years and say, hey, now that you're a veteran member, I'm going to give you the secret. But of course, you have to fork out, well, let's say $5,000 American dollars or maybe $10,000 American dollars or, well, shoot, why not $50,000 American dollars? And if you'll do that, then I'll go ahead and tell you the grand secret. Well, of course, the truth, as you can well imagine, is there is no grand secret. There is no underlying cure, as you can well imagine from everything that I write about. But I do have to confess there is an essential, fundamental secret to being able to launch your program successfully to be able to get relief from the symptoms of Parkinson's. There's no doubt about it. There's something that you can actually do to get relief from the symptoms. So what is it? As it turns out, the answer is you need to have clarity of thought. That then is what I'm going to talk about today. Thoughts are the most powerful concept in the universe. And I also clarify that with the clarity of thought are what can manifest anything your heart desires. So you ask, thought, give me a break. Just because I think something doesn't mean that it's going to actually happen. Well, of course, that's true. But let's think about the power of thought. Before life, there was thought, and thought or thinking was in fact what created life in the first place. Many people ponder year after year and write book after book trying to answer the question, what existed before the universe existed, before the physical manifestation of the planets and the galaxies and the stars and all that we know which exist in physical form? Well, I don't have to write books or ponder that for centuries and centuries. I know the answer. What was present before the universe was physically manifested was thought. Thought, simply what is necessary in order to manifest anything. So thought is more powerful than oil, believe it or not. Thought is more powerful than coal or electricity or nuclear power or the strongest of the strongest men and women in the world. Thought is the most powerful concept that exists in the world. Now, let's think about what happens when you actually set an intention to get well. And you might just do that right now. Get out a piece of paper and a pencil or a pen and answer the following question that I'm going to ask you. Just answer it, whatever comes off the top of your head. Write down your answer. So pencil, paper, could be just a scratch paper. This is just obviously for your own use. And the question is, what would you like to see happen with regard to the symptoms that you now have of Parkinson's? What do you want to see happen? And again, whatever comes to mind first, whatever words, write them down. No censorship, no screening, no judgment. Whatever thought you have, commit that to words and put it down on your piece of paper now. Let me now talk about the meaning of the words that you've just committed to paper. How specific and how concrete is the intention that you are setting for yourself? Did you simply write, "I want to feel better"? Well, if so, that can encompass a wide range of outcomes. In any moment of the day, we can feel better. It's possible. In any moment of the day, we can feel happiness or joy. So I suspect that if that's your intention, within the next hour or perhaps 2 hours, you will fulfill your wish. You will get what it is that you declared was important for you to have. Think about another or an alternative thing you could have written. Suppose that you wrote, "My intention is for my symptoms not to get worse." And actually, many people say just that when they write on their clinic intake forms, "What do you want to get out of this session today?" And the answer is, "I just don't want to feel any worse." Well, as it turns out, people who state that's their intention typically manifest their intention. That is, overall, symptoms may shift here and there, but overall, they feel about as well today as they will 4, 5, or 6, or 10 years from now. That is, they manifested exactly what they thought they needed to manifest. So the clarity of the intention clearly makes a big difference. The more specific you can be, the more concrete that you can be, the more likely it is that you will be able to manifest your fondest intention quickly. So the point of this all is, messy and chaotic thoughts don't get you very far because they lack the energy that is required to manifest those thoughts into physical form. So what's required is specificity and focus and the discipline to essentially focus on a very concrete goal. Now, let me explain, when I talk about focus of thought, the problems that happen when a person is specific in setting the intention that their heart's desire. So let's take an example. Let's take a person who has written in answer to the question that I just asked the following sentence. "I want to walk without freezing." Now, granted, that is indeed very specific. There's nothing chaotic about that intention. Now, let's say that person, and that might be you out there, have set that intention for yourself in terms of what you'd like to see with your recovery program. What is likely to happen now in the next hours or days as you begin to see that intention unfold? Well, if you're like me, it's likely that the kind of thoughts might all of a sudden begin to creep in. And these are messy, negative, chaotic thoughts. So let me ramble a bit and give you a flavor for what is likely to happen. So I say, I want to walk without freezing, and then all of a sudden a thought comes into my mind. Well, there's a problem with my walking stick. It's just not working as well as I would like it to work. I'm really disappointed. And besides, I really have no one to walk with on a regular basis. If I'm going to walk, I need to have some assistance. And besides, I might fall. It's always a possibility that if I'm out walking, no matter whether I'm in my walker or I have my walking stick, I might actually fall. And if I fall, I'll be terribly embarrassed and perhaps at risk, especially if it's cold out now that it's winter, at least in this hemisphere of the universe. Well, and of course we're talking here hours and hours and days of thoughts. And then there are other more personal thoughts that tend to creep in. Well, you know what? I'm just basically incompetent. I'm physically incompetent. I was a strong person years ago, but that's now gone. That's never going to happen again. So I'm basically incompetent, slothful, and, basically I'm at the end of my ropes. The fact is I hate my body. That's all there is to it. My body's just not what it needs to be. And I'm just going to kind of hang around and wait for the end. Do you feel now how diffuse the focus is here? The positive thought, I want to walk without freezing, does not and cannot have enough significant energy to manifest itself in physical form. So there is a discipline that is required in any successful recovery program. And the discipline is to formulate a very specific intention, and just one intention at a time, and to focus on that intention with clarity so that there is no confusion about what it is that you would like to see happen. No negative thoughts, no chaos, no messy thinking, period. I want to walk without freezing. And that then, with a focus on that intention, sets into motion a cascade of possibilities that you can experiment with. It may not be the case that within a week you will be able to accomplish satisfying that intention. But if you stick with it, and if you focus single-handedly on that intention with your thought forms, without adding all of the negative, chaotic caveats, you will see significant progress toward accomplishing that very specific intention.
So focus is really what it is that makes the biggest difference of all. And what I want to invite you to consider is, what is it that you want to see happen? And so when you look back on the list that you created, the answer that you gave, when I ask you the question, what do you want to see happen, how specific is that declaration? Is it clear? Is it specific? If not, think about what it is that you would truly like to see. But instead of saying something like, I would like to recover from, and using the word Parkinson's, how about focusing on your body? What signals, what symptoms are being sent by your body now? Those symptoms change moment to moment and day to day. They are always in flux. So what about now? What is the symptom that is most troubling to you in the moment? Now, knowing that many people find what is truly frustrating happens to be tremors, what I want to say to many of you is, if you put that at the top of your list, great, that's got clear focus. what we know from people who gradually get full relief from their symptoms is that the tremors tend to be the last symptom to dissolve. Many of the others tend to be addressed before the actual tremors are addressed. So if tremors are most problematic for you, chances are it's going to take some time and some effort on your part to be able to actually address that specific symptom. So clarity and focus of thought are what will really ensure that you will begin to feel better over time and that you will begin in time to be symptom free if that is your intention. Again, if you want to accept the premise that that the diagnosis of Parkinson's is basically inevitably a notice that your symptoms will progress and deteriorate, then if you believe that, that is, I will guarantee you, what will happen. But let me also point out that when people tell you, oh, gosh, it's really sad, Parkinson's is a progressive disease, let me point out that the word progressive can either go in a downward direction or an upward direction. So you might want to accept the declaration that Parkinson's is progressive, but why think of it as going downward? If you think it to be so, it will be so. Again, the primary and the fundamental assertion that I give to you is the clarity of your thinking will manifest physical reality for yourself. If you think that Parkinson's is, yes, indeed, progressive, but guess what? It is in a positive direction, then, lo and behold, you will find over time that, yes, you will begin to feel better and better. So it really winds up being key that you begin to practice clarity of thought, clarity of your intention about what you want to see happen. If it's diffuse, sorry, but it will not have the energy to manifest. It needs to be focused and clear. And when it is so, and when you hold the clarity of that focus, you'll be surprised at what you will be able to manifest. What I want to do now is to give to you an exercise that you can do every day this week until the next teleseminar a week from today that I will present, to be able to allow you and invite you to practice the clarity of your thoughts. And here's what I'd like to invite you to do, and we'll go ahead and do that right now. And as I invite you to go through this very brief 10-minute exercise, let me ask you also to think about, okay, what am I thinking as he is now about to ask me to do a little exercise? Are you thinking, wait a minute, do I need to hang up now? Do I need to turn off my computer? Have I listened long enough? Is this a waste of time? What's really going on? Notice the diffuse and the chaotic nature of the thoughts that you are holding right now. So let me suggest that you commit to the next 10 minutes and that what you do is you say, listen, what I need to do for myself is to hone in on the skill of being able to hold a clear thought. Because what I want to do is to manifest the energy of that thought so that I can make my intention happen. So to be clear, I'm not talking about exactly what you need to do to see that intention happen. You'll be able to figure that out once you're able to be clear about the intention that you want to set for yourself. So for the exercise that I want to invite you to do, look around where you're sitting right now and see if you can't find a book that is sitting somewhere nearby. And I say a book, it could be a pamphlet, it could be a book that you are reading this week or last night or this morning. It could be a book that's been sitting up on the shelf and you haven't touched it for 5 or 10 years. Any old book will do is the truth of the matter, because as you see the intent of this exercise, it's all about committing to being able to be clear with your thought forms. So it does take a little exercise to do this, but remember, the people who recover are clear in their intentions and they hold positive thoughts, and so therefore they are able to manifest their intentions. The people who struggle with recovery are all over the place. They're saying one day that they'd like to be able to walk without freezing. The next day they're saying what's really important is the depression. The third day it is to say, well, forget about the freezing. I'm always going to freeze. I'm never going to be able to do anything about that. As everybody knows, it's progressive, blah, 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 blah. What I need to do is I want to be able to sleep. So you see the person has basically got a number of different symptoms, and they're basically chaotic, they're messy, and they're unfocused with regard to the intention that they're actually setting. So find the book, get the book. And it's best if you can actually have it present with you on your lap or right in front of you. And again, any book will do, any pamphlet, anything that's nearby, just put it there right in front of you. Now, we're going to actually go through this exercise. The next thing you're going to need to do each day this week is to find a timer. We have a timer in the kitchen that we use to time cooking. And so that kind of timer does well, or your watch or your cell phone. Be sure to put a 10-minute limit on this exercise, because if you don't, you'll wind up thinking the thought, is my time up, is my time up? And, of course, that is the embodiment of messy, chaotic thinking. So what you're training yourself to do is to be focused. So you want to not have to be concerned about looking at a clock or a watch and wondering whether or not the 10 minutes are up or not. So you want to get a timer. Now, there's no need to get a timer today. I'll time it for you, so I'll be the buzzer for you. Now, you've got your buzzer, who happens to be me in the moment, and you've got your book in front of you. That's all you need to do this. The third set of instructions really are just to be get in a comfortable place. So if you happen to be standing here listening to this conversation and perhaps doing something else in the kitchen, just find a chair somewhere to sit down in, because this does require some focused activity. And I want to promise you, if you'll do it every day for the next 7 days, you'll notice a huge shift in your ability to be focused and clear in your thinking. So get comfortable, and if you're in front of the computer, just notice how your body is positioned. And what I want to now ask you to do is to shut your eyes. Close your eyes. And as you close your eyes, the next instruction is to simply take a nice, slow breath in, and then exhale, just noticing and feeling the feeling of what the breath feels like, and allowing all the tissues and the muscles in your body to relax. And taking in another slow, deep breath, as much air as you can, and then letting all of that delicious oxygen out of your body, and feeling all the tissues, all the muscles, all the bones, all the organs settle in and relax, allowing your body literally to release the tension that's been held since you've been up this morning doing the things that you've been doing. And then again, once or twice more, a breath in, focusing just on releasing tension, all the tension, all the muscles. Focusing on your breath with particular attention to the exhale and what that feels when you actually exhale the air out of your body. And enjoying what it feels like to be more relaxed, since we were certainly earlier into a much more intent focus of talking about this particular subject. Eyes closed with your intention. And focus on your breath, just allowing your body to relax. And having done this, I invite you now to open up your eyes and focus on the book that is in front of you. Let that be your only thought. The thought that you want to hold now is about that book and only about that book, nothing else. As other thoughts come in, as inevitably they will, thoughts like, this is silly, this is stupid, just acknowledge, okay, I'm not focused on my task, and bring yourself back to the assignment. The assignment is, focus on the book that is in front of me. That's my job, to only think about the book. No other thoughts allowed. No thoughts about what am I going to do after the teleseminar is over. No thoughts about what am I going to eat later on today. Only think about the book that is sitting in front of you. Check it out with your eyes. Feel it. You may want to immerse yourself into the thought forms that the book exudes to you. Feelings that you have when you connect with the book and all that it represents. Not beating up on yourself because you begin to think about other subjects, other thoughts. We all do that. But simply acknowledging, oh, that's right, I'm not thinking about the book now. I just began to wonder. And then bringing yourself back to only focus and think about the book. In a place of no time and no space, developing the skill of focus and clarity of thought. Learning to be clear. Only focusing on the book and everything that is there and everything that it represents to you. You may very well find yourself having judgments, and those judgments may be, boy, I'm really bad at this. I just can't stick on the book. I keep thinking about other things. That also is a thought, and just recognize it as there's another one of those messy, chaotic thoughts, and bring yourself back to focus on just the book sitting in front of you. When we focus on one thought and we block everything else out, we're able to create a picture in our mind of what we want to see happen. And as the focus becomes crystal clear, the picture of what we want to see happens becomes crystal clear. Focusing and concentrating only on the book, not about what you're doing here on the teleseminar, not about me, not about anything other than the book. Stopping if you need to take a breath so that you can relax your body, because some of the extraneous thoughts might have created some extra tension in your body. Recentering yourself and again focusing on the book that you chose to focus on today. Acknowledging that this is the most important exercise you can do if you want to see recovery from the symptoms of Parkinson's. Because with clarity of thought, you will be able to make it so. The buzzer has rung, and the time is now ended, so bring yourself out of that place of quiet and concentration, and just acknowledge the work that you just did, which, again, is focused, and I can promise you, I can guarantee you, that if you will just do that very brief 10-minute exercise every day, now for the next 6 days, you will notice every day that you are able to hold longer and longer periods of concentration on the object that you are holding. You don't have to take the same book that you use today. It could be any old book or, quite frankly, any object. I suggest a book, but you can choose an object if you wish. And in other words, get the timer, give yourself an opportunity to relax your body, open your eyes, and then focus on the book. And of course, the idea is to develop the ability to be clear in your thinking about what your intention is. And as you go through the week, I want to invite you to also make a list of what your wishes are with regard to the symptoms that you are presently experiencing. So just make a list of the symptoms that are bothering you. And as you make that list, also then look through and ask yourself, what's the one symptom that's really most nagging me now, this week? What is it that's really up for me? And if there's one that floats to the top time and time again, that may be the focus that will set into motion the work that you need to do now to be able to get relief from that symptom. Different symptoms require different interventions, different therapies, different approaches, and so it depends on which one you choose as to where you look to get some relief. So that's the other suggestion I've got for you is to examine how clear you are about what it is you'd like to see happen. And if you look back on the statement that you wrote about what you'd like to be able to see happen in the very beginning of this discussion and see that it is vague and that it lacks preciseness, then spend some time this week cleaning that up, acknowledging that messy, chaotic thinking will result in exactly what you would expect, messy, chaotic outcomes. Give yourself the opportunity to be clear in thought, and when you have focus and when you have discipline, you will be able to manifest your intentions. I can promise you that outcome. I can promise you that outcome. So as I told you in the very beginning, you probably figured the first step was going to be, you've got to eat better, guys, and so stop all those French fries and all of that fast food stuff. And the answer is, nope, that's actually not it. Where it is at is thought, because thought is the most powerful entity that exists out there in the universe. More powerful than oil or gas or coal or nuclear energy, thought is the most powerful force in the world. I have some questions that I want to address that have been asked, and so let me start with the first that comes with no name or no location. It says, how do I cope with general lethargy? Now, that's a pretty large word, and so it's obviously not clear exactly how that's acting out in your life. But I'm guessing that for you, it's probably a situation where you feel as though you ought to be doing things you're not doing. You feel as though you ought to be productive and you're not productive. It is the case with virtually all the persons that I interview who have the symptoms of Parkinson's, and I assure you that's many, many, many people, that there is an incredibly history of accomplishment that is evident in really everyone's prior life before the symptoms of Parkinson's began to create some challenges. So there's a lot of successes in the history, and if symptoms are beginning to create some physical challenges, there clearly is a difficulty in being able to get anything accomplished. Here's my suggestion, which is one that I'm sure you probably couldn't guess and wouldn't expect would be made. If you are feeling lethargic, one response is to say, let me fight against it. Boy, this is terrible. This means I'm going to be worse tomorrow. This is awful. I can't let this happen. I'm going to have to force myself to get out and do something. Or, if you're listening to this now, it may be you were forcing yourself to be able to get in here at the appropriate time to listen to this discussion. My suggestion to you is just the reverse. If you are experiencing lethargy, then experience it. Allow yourself to go into that complete and full place of what it feels like to be lethargic. And do nothing. I mean, absolutely do nothing. Connect with your body and say, okay, body, you're telling me to slow down. Fine, great, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do nothing. And I can't exactly tell you how you feed yourself, but I'm telling you, go for it. If you're feeling lethargic, then allow yourself to fully and completely experience that feeling. Connect with your body and let your body tell you whatever it needs to tell you. Don't fight it. Go with it. The only way, in my experience, to work through that kind of feeling is to simply accept it and go with it. And that is the one thing that will allow you to move through it. There may be many things that will evolve as you do that. Information that may come, your body may give you signals you weren't listening to. It may be that your body is forcing you to slow down for a particular reason. So slow down, be quiet, listen to your body, and be totally and completely lethargic for as long as it is necessary for you to break out of it. You will break out of it, I will assure you of that, if you do what I suggest today. David from Toledo has the following question. How important is stress reduction? And I'm going to read the rest of the question. I retired early from a swing shift job, and I've been able to forego pharmaceutical drugs for my Parkinson's. And he wants to know how important is stress reduction. And my answer is it is incredibly important. There are several primary causal factors that we know contribute to the symptoms of Parkinson's. And one of those primary causal factors is stress and trauma. What happens is the body begins to pump out those hormones that are associated with getting things done in life, like adrenaline and aldosterone and cortisol. Now, those hormones are miracle hormones in that they equip us to be able to do miracles in our lives. But if they are turned on continuously, we are also then not also producing the hormones that allow for relaxation. The hormones that have names that are very familiar to you. Dopamine is one. So what you want to do is to acknowledge that if you are always on a situation where you are alert continuously, when you are always stressed, your body is producing those hormones that are overriding the serotonin and the melatonin and the dopamine and the other hormones that allow you for being able to relax. You're out of balance. And yes, that does directly contribute to the symptoms of Parkinson's. There's no doubt about it. Many people that I interview who are getting good relief from the symptoms meditate. And we've had a number of sessions on meditations where people have explained how you do it and what incredible results you can have when you actually do meditations. So I would strongly advise, if you ask the question, to begin to explore the many different ways you can pursue to actually get some relief from stress. It is a moment-to-moment challenge. And again, the difficulty is not that stress is bad. It sets our entire physical system up to be able to make things happen. The problem is that when that stress switch is turned on continuously, then there is an imbalance in the body that again triggers the symptoms of Parkinson's. And by the way, a lot of people have the idea that those cells that produce dopamine are dying out and that's the problem. Well, they are atrophying, and that by that what I mean to say is the person more than likely has been under such extreme stress or they have such trauma in their lives that their hormones that are associated with stress have been turned on so continuously, there has been no demand in the body to produce the counterpart hormones. In other words, they died simply out of misuse. So it's very important to establish a stress reduction program. I actually recorded meditations for people to be able to do just that, specifically designed for Parkinson's. And there are many other ways to reduce stress. One of the best, of course, is exercise. One of the reasons exercise is so incredibly effective in helping to see a reduction in the symptoms of Parkinson's is you essentially are adjusting the metabolism of the body upward when you exercise every day. And that means that when stress occurs in your body, the quantity of the hormones that are produced are not as exaggerated. So if I could just explain, let's say you take a person who's relatively sedentary and they're not getting exercise every day. So they're sitting at the dinner table and then all of a sudden they hear a knock at the front door and they don't know who it is. So they have to stand up and walk over to the front door to see who's there. For a person who doesn't exercise, that single, short, unthreatening event can trigger an enormous surge of hormones in the form of adrenaline and all of the others that are associated with adrenaline throughout the entire body system. I mean, the body pumps it out like wildfire. Why? Well, because the person is not used to being physically active. Now, In contrast, a person who is physically active, when that very same circumstance occurs, they're at the dinner table, the doorbell rings, well, they just got great exercise earlier in the morning, their body is used to a higher level of metabolism. So it is not required to pump out those extreme doses of hormones. And I mean, we're not talking about thoughts here. We're talking about the physical presence of substances that are hormones that are manufactured by the physical body. So when the body's not pumping out as much quantity and supply of those stress-related hormones, then there's a greater opportunity for there to be a balance of the relaxation hormones that are, of course, associated with dopamine and serotonin and melatonin and all the others, than there is when you, every time you get a little small challenge, your body just pumps it out like wildfire. So exercise is really a great strategy to be able to get some relief from the symptoms. David also continues to say, does removal of amalgam fillings, those are fillings in the teeth that typically have various composites of metal, does that help along with treatment to remove toxic metals? And the answer is, well, yes, of course. And some people have mercury that's basically bleeding into their system every day, a little small dose of mercury, and you can imagine what that's doing to their body systems. Now, whether removal of the actual amalgams would be recommended for anyone with Parkinson's is really questionable. John Coleman, who had Parkinson's in the mid-90s and actually was able to become symptom-free and now is a naturopath doctor who helps other people, in the beginning of his practice, helping others recover from the symptoms of Parkinson's, made recommendations that people have the metal amalgam fillings removed from their teeth. And he said his experience was rather interesting. He said for some people who were in more advanced stages, that was a very significant toll. It was a very significant trauma that really was probably unnecessary because they did not see a relief of their symptoms. He said two of the people had immediate relief of their symptoms. I mean, they took the metal out, and then in a matter of a few months, they were symptom-free. The causes of various individuals' symptoms vary widely. The variation in symptoms is huge. We call that a standard deviation in statistics. It's huge when you look at Parkinson's. So to say that one person can remove amalgams and get total relief, that will happen to you is a mistake. It may or may not. It really depends on your own situation and whether or not that is a primary contributing factor. If you have metal fillings in your body, they are leaking out into your physical body, into the tissues of your body. There's no doubt about it. The question is that leakage overloading the ability of your body to get some cleansing relief? The body can only discharge so many noxious materials and metals and pesticides at one time. And so the question is oftentimes not so much the specific metal, but rather the overload of toxins in the body. And when they get overloaded, all those neural systems get totally clogged and are unable to function properly. I would say that one kind of activity that any individual can do that's actually free and is very advisable is to give blood to the Red Cross. It's free. And what happens is that in terms of toxins, iron oftentimes accumulates in the body, and it's present mostly in the blood. And one of the ways to essentially cleanse yourself of overdoses of iron is to give blood. And you can do that two or three times a year and sometimes actually see some relief from symptoms. I do know that it has been asserted that one of the reasons that men tend to have heart attacks early in life is because they've got a toxic exposure of iron in their bodies, and if they had simply been giving blood to the Red Cross, they wouldn't have had their heart attacks. And of course, iron in the research literature of Parkinson's is paramount as a factor that contributes to the symptoms. We know that's the case. So ferrous materials are not a good thing to have in the body at toxic levels. So the answer is the removal can make a huge difference to some people. To other people, it doesn't. And for individuals who are really struggling, it's probably going to be a trauma that may not need to be experienced. I do want to say that if you're contemplating removal of amalgam fillings, be very cautious about the practitioner, the dentist that you use. There are biological dentists who are specially trained to be able to remove amalgam fillings so that the metals do not bleed into the tissues. It's a special set of skills that are used. That's another one of the problems. Sometimes removing the fillings actually just overwhelms the body with too much of those metals, particularly mercury. So it's an interesting issue. Certainly, if everybody with Parkinson's had the metal removed, we're not going to see a total relief of symptoms. But for some people, it does make a huge, huge difference. He also goes on to say, I had all of my amalgams removed 3 months ago. Sounds like for him, that was a good idea, and started to use infrared sauna along with Chlorella. Those are wonderful detoxing systems that you can use. Infrared saunas have been reported by some people that I've interviewed to be great, offer great relief because they detox the body of toxins. So infrared saunas, if you can get yourself into one, boy, that's a great thing to do. I've got a question from Shalik from Karachi, and it says, how to cope with incontinence. And what I want to react to with that particular question is the thought form is cope. The question being asked is, how do I cope with it? The question is not, well, how do I heal this? So I'd like to suggest to Shalik, ask yourself the question, why are you accepting the presence of incontinence as a permanent condition in yourself? Why not set the intention to heal that and to set in motion the processes that are necessary to be able to figure out how to do it? So instead of speaking to what is it that will be necessary to heal that, and instead of speaking to the specific questions that Shahik asked, which is how to cope with it, I'd say, why cope? Why not set the intention to heal it? May not happen in a day or week, a month or a year, but by Jove, the body does know how to heal itself if you give it the support that it needs. And if there is incontinence, the body is giving out a signal that something is not right. And if I had to guess, what I'd say is there's something that's being put into the body that should not be put into the body. So the body is immediately getting rid of it. Chances are you're allergic to something that you're eating. Or it may be not just eating, but putting onto your body in the form of perhaps some makeup or lotions. Something you're doing, the body is furiously trying to get rid of. So you might want to look into the area of what exposure do you have with regard to food allergies or other substances you may be actually exposed to. Sam from Boynton Beach says, burning feeling around the groin area, back of thighs, and often backside is a problem that is very debilitating. Is this malaise due to Parkinson's? That's the question. And the answer that I want to give to you, Sam, is, of the huge list of symptoms I have seen associated with Parkinson's, about everything that can happen to the human body has been associated with Parkinson's. And the answer is yes. Yes, I get people reporting that symptom to me. Just last week I had a report of that. Yes, the answer is yes. Now,